You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. They met while doing back-to-back music shows on public radio in Detroit, and that chance scheduling blossomed into a friendship going strong after more than three decades, a friendship grounded in their love of acoustic roots music.
It was a big day,
oh,
day in Dallas,
oh,
oh, I wish I was there,
oh,
spend my last $100 on that iron gray mare. See her travel all day long, long, long. See her travel all day long.
The Reverend Robert Jones and Matt Wautroba have spent these decades crisscrossing Michigan and the country, bringing their roots music to audiences of all ages. Now they're taking this work to a new level, forming a nonprofit called Common Chords, aiming to connect Michigan's diverse communities through music. Robert Jones, Matt Wautroba, it is such a pleasure to welcome you to Stateside.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
I love what you do here, Cynthia. Thank you so much for having us on.
Well, I got to say, it's a personal pleasure for me because back in the early 90s, I would run my Saturday errands starting Saturday morning, and I would listen to both of you as I was running around doing things before heading to WKBD-TV for my anchoring reporting shift from 2 to 11. So you guys were an essential part of my Saturdays, and now I have you here.
And maybe more importantly, I remember you supporting public radio. So, you know, you come from a good place.
The circle's complete. Well, it's great to have you here. You know, I stop and I think about how you have each devoted your lives to acoustic roots music, folk, blues. And I'm wondering, what makes a song or a melody roots music?
That's a very good question. I think maybe for me, it's the idea of what attracted me to artists like Sonny Terry and Bronnie McGee or Sam Lightning Hopkins or even Son House. I think it's the immediacy of it. You don't have a drummer, you don't have a bass player, you don't have a lot of the, I guess, artifice of pop music. What you have is somebody really with an instrument and the voice coming directly from the heart. And I think I've always been in love with the immediacy of it.
And I would only add to that the idea of tradition, that when you're talking about the kind of music Robert and I play, we're talking about something that stands on the shoulders that goes back not just decades, but thousands of years. You know, a character will pop up in a blues song that you can trace back to a ballad that's 400 years old.
Well, to that point, I went to your website and I was listening to the music you had up there, and you've got a recording of the song Stewball on your website, which is about a horse that raced in England and Ireland in the 1750s, but then to realize it became an American chain gang song that Lead Belly and Woody Guthrie made famous. I mean, talk about the twists and the turns that these songs take. Right.
And then Peter, Paul, and Mary had the biggest version of it, and it doesn't sound anything like any of the other versions. Robert and I refer to it as like playing that game of telephone that kids play, where if you whisper something in one kid's ear and then they whisper it, the fun is at the end, the message is never the same. Well, roots music, what we're talking about, this American folk music, is really like centuries worth of telephone. People never writing this music down, people remembering it the way they're remembering it, passing it on. It gets remembered a different way, and pretty soon you have 17 different versions of an obscure horse race that took place in Ireland in the 1700s.
Or the melody that, for example, the When Johnny Comes Marching Home goes back to Irish folk music. Mm-hmm. And when you think about what that means, total difference if it's being sung on the road to Sweet Athy in Ireland versus the Confederates marching song.
What it does, though, for us is it tells our story. This music tells our story, and I think that is really probably the biggest appeal. Wouldn't you say, Robert?
I definitely agree. The idea is that we want to not only celebrate the product, but we want to celebrate the process. That idea of hearing a song somewhere or hearing a melody somewhere and then using that melody to produce something else, which in turn produces something else, that's a process that I think needs to be celebrated and protected and promoted. And it's very different from the idea of picking the next big artist, American, whatever, because, you know, you have a certain amount of charisma, smile, whatever. But the idea that the song itself is that which is preserved, and by preserving the song, you preserve the feeling and the associations and all of the great grist that goes into making this stuff what it is.
I'm interested in knowing, before you ever wound up on radio, you both had years and years of being working musicians. And I'm wondering, when did you first pick up an instrument?
Well, actually, I started my performing career after my radio involvement.
But you've been playing, right?
I had been playing for a little while.
Yeah.
And what it was is you know, in every community when I was growing up, there was always music around us. There was the guy down at Hudson's downtown who would sing in the loading dock, the blind busker. To this day, I don't know who he is. But I remember as a kid walking past him and hearing him singing and yelling, whatever that was he was playing. And so my grandmother had a friend named Mr. Buddy who had, as far as I know, one song. It was called, "I'm Going to Kansas City, Honey, Where They Don't Want You." And I remember Mr. Buddy playing that song. And then, you know, I got a hold of a guitar and sort of started to teach myself how to play. For me, that was a really valuable experience. And to have Mr. Buddy come by the house one day and see my little guitar in the corner and say, "You mind if I try your box?" And I go, "Oh, I've arrived, Mr. You know."
So I it's have like, ascended to the heights.
I have ascended to the heights. So it's just that kind of natural idea. And also the idea of being the nerd. You know, not having four brothers who could dance, Motown was not going to happen for me. But being the kid who could take that guitar and it would be your friend and it would be your object of power and all that kind of good stuff. It's really been a blessing.
And you, Matt.
Here's what fascinates me, Cindy, is that Robert and I grew up about 25 minutes apart from each other in completely different worlds. And it was really public radio that brought us together. I was 13, 14 years old at Plymouth Canton High School. And I walked into this classroom of a woman who's passed on. Her name was Barbara Masters. And she had this amazing room. It looked like the DIA had exploded, you know, so there wasn't a single place in the entire room where there wasn't a sculpture or a poem or a picture or a, it was just this beautiful testament to art. And on this little coat hanger sticking in the acoustic ceiling tile was this sign that had three words and it said, "Art saves lives." And I thought to myself as a 13-year-old, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then,
what can you tell me? I'm 13. I know everything.
And then isn't it funny? I've never forgotten that sign because those three words have really defined my life. Art, in fact, has saved my life as well as countless others. You know, we talk so much about sports in schools and of course, it does great things. But I don't think we tell the story enough about that kid who maybe couldn't put a sentence together but could speak Shakespeare from a stage, or a kid who could not say what was on his mind but could pick up a paintbrush and paint what was on his mind.
Or play it on a piano or on a guitar.
And so at the same time Robert was discovering the blues in the Detroit Public Library, I was in the Dearborn Public Library looking up Bob Dylan and Tom Paxton and Phil Oakes and the Greenwich Village folk scene. And here we were. We didn't know each other yet, mm-hmm. but we were already doing the work that became our friendship and our career.
I love that. So you were down at the main branch of the library.
Absolutely.
I used to do the same thing.
Azalea Hackley Collection.
With the headphones on. And every
absolutely.
Album in the world was there to listen to. We were probably sitting next to each other. Discovering the Clancy Brothers. So that there we are. Like, oh, look at this. You know, I'm wondering over these years that you've been musical partners, because you've got over 30 years of doing this. Have you seen audiences change or evolve in the way that they receive these songs? I'm wondering, are they hitting people in 2019 the way that you saw them do them in 1989?
You know, I would say that it's a fascinating thing to watch. As a performer, you're able to sort of see just how much the stuff you're doing is needed at any given time. And it depends often. It reflects what's going on politically and socially in our country, because it is the people's music and it has always reflected what the people are up to if you're doing it in an honest way. I think it's safe to say that right now it's being received better than it's ever been received in my career.
What's the hunger? Why is the hunger there?
Well, I think because, you know, we live in a fast food society and everything is sort of immediate and packaged for you. And when you sit down to that home-cooked meal, there's nothing like it. And this music is like the home-cooked meal. It has substance. It has power. It tells a story. And I think people hunger for that, especially young people, especially love being exposed to music that is not all about style and flash.
And that isn't marketing to them all the time. And mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that this music does for younger people. It isn't asking them to buy anything. And they get a little – and, you know, part of the work I've been doing, too, is this idea of community singing, this thing I really adopted from an interview I did with Pete Seeger when he was 89 years old. This idea of bringing folks who just love to sing, whether they're good at it or not, doesn't even matter. But there's something about creating a human connection through art which creates really strong connections.
And with that in mind, would you play something for us?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
Ready? One. Sowing on the mountain,
sowing on the mountain,
reaping in the valley,
reaping in the valley,
sowing on the mountain,
sowing on the mountain,
reaping in the valley,
reaping in the valley,
sowing on the
mountain,
reaping in the valley,
reaping in the valley.
You're gonna reap just what you sow. If you've been a gambler,
if you've been a gambler,
better quit your gambling,
better quit your gambling.
If you've been a gambler,
if you've been a gambler,
better quit your gambling,
better quit your gambling.
If you've been a gambler, gonna reap just what you sow. Sowing on the mountain,
sowing on the mountain,
reaping in the valley,
reaping in the valley,
sowing on the mountain,
sowing on the mountain,
reaping in the valley.
And that is a home-cooked musical meal from Robert Jones and Matt Wetrobe. And with that, I want to turn to your latest effort, this nonprofit called Common Chords, and that's musical chords, connecting communities through music and the arts. What is this effort?
Well, Cynthia, we have logged countless miles together. And when we're trying to get from Detroit to wherever it is we're going, we're having these conversations. And we discovered early on, our first gig together was kind of a window into what we would end up doing for the rest of our lives. Somebody invited us to come and play a record store in Grosse Pointe. They put aside the record bins, and we had never played together. And so we're trying to figure out, what do we know in common that we can play? And I had his repertoire of blues, and Matt has his repertoire of folk. And somehow we were just hitting on a rhythm, and it became country. We started playing. We realized, you know, as a kid growing up in Detroit, I actually watched Hee Haw. So we discovered we had country in common. And so the idea is, behind Common Chords, as we travel along, wouldn't it be great to have a nonprofit that focuses on celebrating those things that we share in common instead of fighting about those things that tend to separate us?
One of the metaphors we use in one of our programs called Music That Matters is the idea that music is like a tree. And on this tree are all these different branches, and each branch might be a different kind of American music, a different genre, if you will. There might be a jazz branch and a folk branch and a blues.
Hip-hop,
but isn't it perfect if you go underneath the ground under every living tree and you find what connects those branches? That's why roots music seems to be the perfect way to talk about the connections. You know, Robert and I will do this program for young people, for older people, it doesn't matter. But one of the things we never do is say the word diversity, because we don't have to. They see it every time we perform together.
And I know that you've got programs you've developed. You've got the website up. Now it's commonchords.net. But how do you want this work that you're doing to bring Michiganders together?
Well, one of the things that we're working on right now, and we're really excited about it because we actually have a couple grants in and it looks good. We've made the finals anyway. and we have a program called 20 Minutes Apart, which really focuses on what Matt was talking about a little while ago, that when you really get to know us, Matt and I are really kind of different. I mean, not us, aside from the fact, you know, he's white and I'm black.
Yeah.
Did you know you were white?
No, wow.
Anyway, aside from that, city and suburb, you know, I'm in church every Sunday because I pastor a church on the east side of Detroit. Matt, not so much. And, you know, but he grew up in the cathedral of baseball. And you know, we're really different in terms of personality. We lead parallel lives. Our families are pretty much, you know, same age and things like that. But we start to think about, how could we be so different, but nevertheless have a 30-year-plus friendship and nevertheless be able to share a stage and be respectful? And sometimes when Matt and I are on the stage, I can think something and he does it. But he thinks something, and I do.
I've never worked with a musician that I had better communication with, nonverbal on stage. Robert, we can glance over and know what to do next.
Musical it's really, ESP.
It's astonishing.
Right.
It really is. So, that could come with 26 hours in the car over the weekend.
Because it sure doesn't come with rehearsal. I'll tell you, we rarely rehearse. But the idea is that's a conversation we think that this state of Michigan needs to have, that you don't have to be identical to be friends. You don't have to necessarily look alike. You don't have to have grown up in the same way in order to be a community. And that idea of community is a word that tends to separate us. We talk about the Black community, white community, gay community. But really the idea of community is something that should unite us, right? Because you're you and I'm me, but we're all together in this stew.
And if you believe that at the root, you know, not just of that tree, but of who we are as humans, we're all connected, then all that stuff doesn't matter. That's a level of truth that's a little deeper than who you voted for or what you believe or, you know, and what church you go to.
And what better way to experience that than sitting together with other people, not online, not with ear pods in, isolated from everything,
with
but
art,
together,
music, yeah.
Art and music together. Well, I know that you've got the ARC this Friday, May 17th, and Mama's Coffee House at the Birmingham Unitarian Church on May 18th. And you can go to commonchords.net and find out other shows that are scheduled. And I take it you want to get out and get these programs out to as many folks as you can.
Absolutely. And also, we're interested in the idea of working with other musicians and honoring other musicians.
And other artists.
And other artists.
Musicians.
Absolutely. Not just music.
Music and art.
Yes. Music and art. Storytelling, visual art. All of this is just part of this great mix. We're a couple of guys who've been blessed to have, you know, pretty nicely sustained career. We have great representation. Tammy Levitch, artist management, you know. And so he keeps us busy. But there's a point at which you want to give back. You want to start talking about legacy. You want the next generation of artists that you want to be able to champion the art and just talk about what we've been blessed to do in some real substantive ways.
We'd like to inspire other artists to realize that you can take these incredible gifts that you have and use them for lots of different and get paid for it too. And, you know, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. We will be at the ARC in Ann Arbor playing for about 400 kids who have been bussed in from all over. And we've done this program 7 or 8 times this year. And it's you know, Cynthia, once you see 400 kids standing up, crossing arms and singing We Shall Overcome in 2019, it's pretty fascinating to be part of that bigger picture. And we'd like to show artists how they can also take their gifts and put them to work in the community.
Robert Jones and Matt Wotroba, years and years of music, and now you're taking it to this new level with this new nonprofit effort, Common Chords, connecting communities through music and the arts. Get all the details at commonchords.net. And what a pleasure to have you here on Stateside. Thank you.
It's great to see you.
Thank you, Cynthia.
You're gonna read just what you saw.